You're listening to the Strong Towns Podcast.
Hey everybody, this is Chuck Marone. Welcome back to the Strong Towns Podcast. I'm sitting here in the studio, the recording studio at my studio at the Franklin Arts Center, formerly Franklin Junior High School here in Brainerd, Minnesota. We got, like 16 inches of snow over the last couple days. We went all winter with no snow at all, nothing. Literally had like no snow on Christmas. No snow January, February. I said, you know, we've had like 4 months of March, and March is the worst month of the year in Minnesota. It, you know, the snow's not usable. It's cold. It's hot. It's cold. It's warm. It's wet and mushy, and everything's dark and brown and dead. And it's just, it's the least desirable month. And we literally had that kind of weather for most of November, all of December, all of January, all of February, and most of March. And then for some reason, inexplicable, we just got 16 inches of snow. So it's gorgeous out. It's beautiful out. It's wonderful. I mean, it looks great. But I had actually ordered fence for my garden. I had actually ordered new blueberry plants. You know, I'm like getting ready for spring. I actually went over to the garden the other day and was kind of planning things out. This is very weird. Anyway, welcome. I'm feeling really happy. My schedule is about what it's been in prior years in terms of the amount of travel and the amount of stuff I'm doing. But we have reached a point as an organization where we were able to, over this past year, hire a chief of staff, someone to help me kind of day-to-day run this place. And there's a lot going on here at Strong Towns. There's a lot to do. There are a lot of decisions to be made. And quite frankly, I was having a really hard time keeping up with this, with the podcast, the videos that I do regularly, with the writing that I do, with some of the, I mean, the reason I'm here, right? Some of the intellectual work that is challenging, yet fun and rewarding. Struggling to do that and do all the things that needed to happen to keep this organization running. I, in a sense, was willing to kind of sacrifice some of this stuff to do that, but the movement kind of suffers when I do that too. I mean, you all are out there and we have a relationship, and that relationship to some degree extends on me being here and being present. And when I go for long stretches of time where I'm not, it's kind of tough. So we got some help from me this year. We had a donor kind of step up and provide that funding for us. And wow, it has been transformative. I mean, you'll see, I don't think I've missed a podcast week this year, really. I certainly haven't missed any weeks with my column, and we've got the video channel up and running now. And yeah, it's been great. And I get to spend my days, you know, I still am involved. I mean, I'm still doing meetings and all that, but I'm not doing agendas. I'm not doing all the backup. I mean, it's really, really been transformative. So I'm extremely happy. I'm in a good mood. I'm actually living my best life right now. And, you know, things are hitting on all cylinders here. It's going great. So let me go in a completely different direction then. Bum, bum, bum. I want to talk about the election. I'm not trying to be like pre-crabby about this. Yeah, and in fact, I say I'm not being pre-crabby because I'm already getting inundated with this a little bit. I felt for a while that I needed to do this. I'm going to do it now, today. I wrote an article for the site, so I've got a column on this. So we're trying to kind of hit it in different formats. It's a little bit like, I feel like this is a tooth that needs to be pulled. Like, we need to be very clear about something. And then hopefully we can just reference people back to this episode in the future when this issue comes up again, because it comes up really every other year, but every fourth year it comes up in a big, big way. And so I'm just going to clarify the Strong Towns approach to election years. I want to go back because I started writing the blog that would become Strong Towns, that would become like our full media site and everything that we do today. I started this in November of 2008. If you remember 2008, and I know not everybody listening does or does in the way that I do, November 2008, if we look back, in a triumphant kind of way, was the election of Barack Obama. And I will say, I did not vote for Barack Obama, but I did feel his election as a triumph, right? Like many of us, the historic nature of that election, the historic nature of him and his candidacy and then his presidency was one that made me happy, quite frankly. I mean, I remember appreciating that aspect of it, even if we, you know, particularly at the time, I did not feel aligned from a policy perspective with him. It was not I remember at the time it being a very contentious election. But when I look back now today, that's like so quaint, right? It was an election that was not filled with the kind of rancor that we have experienced of late, right? That doesn't mean that that year was not tumultuous. 2008 was an incredibly tumultuous year. You had kind of the unraveling of the subprime mortgage market. So you had banks starting to fail. I mean, you had Bear Stearns fail in the spring, kind of bailed out by Wall Street banks with backing from the federal government. You had ultimately Fannie and Freddie fail, the two government-sponsored entities. You had AIG, the major insurer for all mortgage loans, go under. You had Lehman Brothers fail and famously be allowed to go into bankruptcy and then, you know, in a cascading kind of take down the whole market. You had this culminating in bank rescues and bailouts and all kinds of like insanity, things that never seemed possible all of a sudden were, you know, front and center on the table. It was a very disorienting time. And I remember as someone who had spent the prior like years ahead of that election, developing, you know, exploring, let's say, like trying to figure out, maybe is a better way to put it, some of the ideas that would later become core to Strong Towns, like the growth Ponzi scheme, why our cities were going bankrupt, why we were struggling so much financially, to get to 2008 and have the only thing that our major candidates agreed on was really the things that I thought were an absolute disaster for our economy, right? We needed to bail out Wall Street banks. We needed to have huge amounts of money put into shovel-ready projects. We needed to invest in all kinds of infrastructure, right? We needed to prop up. The housing market was in a huge bubble. I mean, we look back today and call it a housing bubble, but the thing we needed to do more than anything else was to prop up this bubble, right? Reinflate it. These were our policy objectives that had consensus. And I remember getting to the end of 2008 and just thinking, the world is crazy or I am crazy. Like one of these two things is true. And I'm not quite sure which one it is. I've said this many times that I started writing this blog as a form of therapy. You know, if you go to a therapist, they're going to tell you, you know, have you tried journaling? And for those of you that don't write, this might seem like a pithy kind of thing. But for those of you that do, you'll recognize that writing is a form of organizing your thoughts. When you actually write things down, it forces you to take things that float around abstractly in your brain and then organize them in a way that you can communicate thoughts to others. And so I started to write this blog as a way to organize my thoughts, as a way to share those thoughts with others, and really as a way to get feedback on this question, you know, am I crazy or is the world crazy? This was 2008, and we can fast forward multiple years, right? There was a 2012 election, a 2016 election, right? I've been through the election cycle now multiple times. Every time it is difficult and contentious. I remember in 2012, right? Barack Obama's second term, or second time running for election, right? His re-election campaign. This idea, you know, being kind of inundated for a number of months with pressure to speak out one way or the other on things. At this point, 2012, Struck Downs was huge, enormous compared to where we started, compared to where we are today. It was a tiny, tiny, tiny audience of people, you know, measured in the tens of thousands, not the millions. And I got to say, I felt like immense amount of pressure to speak up and to kind of speak my mind and be part of this election cycle. That only magnified when we got to 2016. There was this thing, and I'm going to say this, and you know, this entire episode will border on politics. I hope we end up in a space where you understand just my aversion to what has become, you know, defined as politics today in our discussion. But I'm going to say some things that will border on like sounding political, I suppose, as we go. But prior to the 2016 election, there was a certain, let's say, just strain of city building conversation that looked at strong towns as the conservatives, right? I mean, even today, that is out there. I mean, we see publications on the left, you know, liberal progressive publications framing us as, you know, very conservative. I've seen libertarian attached to us. By the way, I've also seen, you know, ultra progressive, 15-minute cities. I mean, the whole spectrum, right, attached to us. But there was a certain vein, because I was such a dominant force in this. I mean, I was not one of literally dozens of voices. I was the voice or the primary voice up really until 2013, 2014. The idea was, you know, this is Chuck Marrone. Chuck Marrone is from a small town. He is conservative. Ergo, Strong Towns is a conservative organization. And so before 2016, a lot of organizations that wanted to engage in, you know, let me just put it very coarsely, wanted to engage in red state area on blue state kind of issues, wound up contacting me saying, can you help with this? I remember one meeting, this is a little side tangent, but it's a funny story. There's a prominent publication. I'm not going to say the name of it because I don't want to make this personal with them. It's a publication that talks about transportation and has blog in their name. So this publication was kind of fascinated with Strong Towns, was fascinated with my writing and some of the other writers that we had here, and contacted me and said, could you help us? We are trying to do outreach in conservative states, in red states. We are very kind of blue state coded. Could you come and help us with this messaging? And they flew me out to a place and, you know, I spent a couple of days. And the idea was that I was going to kind of help them. I thought I was actually walking in to kind of have a conversation. Ultimately, I wound up at a table with about, I don't know, 8-10 people. And they all had pens and they all had a piece of paper. And they turned to me and said, so what do we say to get conservatives on board? And I'm like, what do you mean? How would you say this in a way that, you know, someone from, and I remember them keying on Oklahoma for some reason, someone from Oklahoma would agree with. And I remember being kind of bewildered by this. Like, this is not like, there's not some magical incantation that you speak, you know, that gets people who don't think like you to agree with you. You have to actually like sincerely understand them. You have to actually approach their concerns with validity. You have to actually listen to them and talk to them and empathize with them and understand them. And then you can communicate with them across differences. You can communicate them building on shared values across differences, you know, places where you disagree. And having empathy does not mean you agree with someone. It means that you understand their perspective, right? You understand where they're coming from. And in order to build kind of consensus, in order to kind of work on issues across differences, you have to actually work at empathy. I got a lot of blank stares, right? I got a lot of people looking at me like, okay, I don't understand. We were looking for the five words that you speak that, you know, unlocks the code. Please help us. That became a lot more clear to me in 2016, because in 2016, the presidential election was deeply, deeply contentious. When I grew up, there was a saying, I mean, I'm in the 1980s when I was in high school, there was a saying, you know, all politics is local. And that was kind of the belief. And I think that was a belief that people had at the time. And it was a belief that was founded or grounded in the experience of people running for politics, you know, running for office, that all politics is local. I come from Minnesota. Minnesota is, you know, the home of Hubert Humphrey and Walter Mondale. We're very progressive in our politics. Yet the whole time I grew up, we were represented by two Republicans. They were Republicans, you know, I was just going to say, they're Republicans in name only. They would be called that today because they were certainly Minnesota Republicans, which meant they were not kind of a hard, you know, a very dogmatic brand of Republicans. They were kind of a compromising brand of Republicans, right? You saw more of this kind of not so rigid ideologically or not so rigid party-based, more, you know, fluidity in terms of beliefs and votes and cross-party, that kind of thing. By the time we get to 2016 then, the entire election season was no longer all politics is local. It was what? All politics is national, right? Your dog catcher has to have a view on abortion and gun rights. You know, name your issue, right? Like everybody does. Today, it's, you know, the person running the Soil and Water Conservation District has to have a stance on Gaza, right? I mean, that's just like the way things are. All politics is national now. So in 2016, we were trying really, really hard because Strong Towns is a bottom-up movement. We are focused on cities, blocks, neighborhoods, individuals, getting out there, doing things, making their cities better. What power do people have where they don't have to cede that to the regional authority, the state authority, the federal government in order to get things done? What can we do today with the things we have on hand? And over and over and over again, people kept trying to drag us into the national election. They kept wanting us to be part of that. We did a good job avoiding that. We did a good job staying out of that. We did a really good job staying focused. But I got to tell you, the day after the election, things went insane. On November whatever, 2016, when Donald Trump was named the president-elect, I was in Texas at the time. I was giving a talk. I remember it because I was getting some work done on my teeth. I'm like the healthiest guy ever. I've been blessed with like really good genetics. I'm very, very healthy. I've never really had a lot of problems, but I have had teeth problems from playing basketball and hockey and other things. Anyway, I was having this tooth thing where they drilled like a screw up into my mouth, and it was really, really painful and nasty. I got that done on election day. Flew that afternoon down to Texas and was sitting in a hotel room watching the election with ice on my mouth, getting ready to get up the next morning and give a speech to hundreds of people in this conference center. I remember I got up that next day and I went and gave the talk and everything went really well. The vibe was a little weird. I know I made a Trump joke. You know, you have a little bit of banter in these talks. I made some off the cuff remark and people laughed. It went over. It felt, you know, a little jovial. I think we were all kind of stunned trying to figure out like, what was this going to mean? Because if you don't remember 2016, nobody expected Donald Trump to win that election. I mean, I remember having the New York Times tracker open that night and they actually had this, it was like a speedometer thing. And on one side it was Trump and on the other side it was Hillary Clinton. And it started the night at like 96% chance that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And then it sat there and it sat there and sat there. And then all of a sudden it just went bam to the other side. 100% Donald Trump is going to win. It was a shocker to everybody. Well, most everybody. There's been a handful of people who said, I saw this coming. I did not see this coming. So I was among the audience there that was, you know, trying to grasp like what were the implications of this? What was this going to mean? I got out of my talk and I went back to my room and I started to pack up and gonna head out of town and head home. And I looked at my email and like my inbox was flooded. Our Twitter feed was flooded. My Facebook page was overwhelmed. I had messages coming in from everywhere. It was like every light was blinking red. Bam, 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 like Chuck, you need to do something. Chuck, we need a statement from you. Chuck, you know, what is Strong Towns going to do about this? there was a group of people, and this group of people kind of grew as the weeks went on, who said, we know you are conservative, whatever that means. We know you are conservative, and we know you voted for Trump. You need to denounce him in strong terms. Let me tell you, I've said this on one other podcast. Otherwise, I've refused to answer this question because it became one of these like, prove to me you don't beat your wife kind of things. You're forced into a defensive position right off the bat. And I just refuse to play that game. Let me say very clearly, I never voted for Donald Trump in 2016. I also did not vote for Donald Trump in 2020. I've not voted for him, and I didn't, but there was this kind of internet campaign, as happens sometimes on Twitter and then on Facebook, of people like demanding that I renounce my own vote for Trump, that I condemn him in strong terms, that Strong Towns join what was being called the resistance, a coalition of groups. This is in November, right? That was going to fight against Donald Trump and the Donald Trump presidency. We had people who, and again, we're a nonprofit organization. We run on, 40% of our funding even today comes from $5 a month, $10 a month donations from thousands of members. We are a member-based organization. So all of a sudden I had this, it wasn't a flood of members, but it was not a small number of people who, got a hold of me and said, like, I demand a refund on my donation to you. I gave you $50 last year. I want it back. I will not be associated. I will not be affiliated with anyone who voted for Donald Trump and, or anyone who refuses to denounce him in the strongest terms. This was really tough. It was really, really tough because, again, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. Whatever that is to you, I'm not motivated by it. I'll also be clear. I mean, I did not vote for Hillary Clinton and I did not vote for Joe Biden. I have not voted for a major party candidate in a while in a federal election and, in the statewide election, not as much either of either of those two. So that gives you a little sense of where I'm at. But for the most part, for the movement, for the organization, for Strong Towns, we are trying really, really desperately to focus on what we do well, focus on the bottom up. We ultimately, the one thing that we did do is that we refused to be part of this. We stayed on message. We stuck to Strong Towns issues. It cost us some members. It cost me some friends. I mean, people who I thought were my friends or who I counted as friends in October of 2016, in November of 2016, wanted nothing to do with me. That was not me that changed, right? It got so bad at one point. This was back in the kind of peak Facebook days. I had this auto scheduler on Facebook and I just went and scheduled like 2 weeks, twice a day of just happy pictures. Like I remember I found a picture of these little dogs, these little puppies. I posted that. I found one of like rainbow over a mountainscape. I found one of little chickens. Like I was posting this on my feed because I understood the algorithm of Facebook was giving me angry, nasty people in my feed, like people who just wanted to yell at me. And conversely, it was also giving me to them, right? Like it was feeding me to them. And I just wanted to be out of their splash zone. So I'm going to take 2 weeks. I'm not going to do anything on Facebook except post these happy pictures. And I just watched it. And like the first few days when these posted, people just get angry. They're like, stop trying to distract me. Stop trying to change the subject. But by like day five, day six, day seven, it was like Facebook detoxed my feed. And I got back to having like just nice people again, like just like friendly people. Like, here's my kid. Look at him play in the snow. Like, here's my Christmas presents. Here's my baking. It got back to like nice things again, but it took a while to detox. This is a really hard time. And I got to say, I'm sure there's people listening who are like, it's a hard time for everybody. Okay, I get it. At Strong Towns, we're very, 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 very focused on what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to do. And within our organization, within our movement, we have people who are sensitive to all kinds of things. I am positive that on our staff, we have people who voted for Trump. I'm positive on our staff. We have people who think voting for Trump is like the most horrible thing in the world. You know what? We've never really talked about it. We don't sit around and talk about that internally. It is not the issues that motivate us, right? We spend a lot of time talking about how we make streets safer, how we get more housing built, how do we end highway expansions, how do we get rid of parking minimums and parking mandates, how do we make local government counting more real, more transparent, more understandable to people so that we can make better decisions? How do we build strong towns? How do we build great cities? We spend all of our time talking about that and talking about ways to communicate these issues, ways to talk about these issues, ways to frame the conversation so that we can have a really, really good conversation about those issues. Elections suck the air out of the room. And there's a loud and vocal contingent of people that want us to lose focus, that want us to, in a sense, take our eye off the strong towns ball and transfer it onto the things that they are most passionate about, the things that they think are the most important things at the moment. Here's the thing. I get that. I understand that. I respect it. And I don't expect that everybody listening to this podcast doesn't care about what's going on in Gaza. Of course you should care. You just should not come to us for that. I'm not an expert on Mideast peace. I'm not an expert on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I am not. There's nobody here in our organization that is. We don't study it. We don't talk about it. We don't know anything about it. Don't come to us for that. That's not what we're here for. If that's the thing you're most passionate about, and that's the thing you really care about the most, I'm fine if you come to me as a person and say, hey, Chuck, there's something I'd like you to know. I'd like to talk to you about this. You may or may not get my attention. We may or may not have a productive conversation. I'm fine with that. I think that is a good role. You may start your own organization and you may be blasting out things and using communication techniques and going around giving talks and doing whatever about that issue because you think that's the most important issue. And you know what? I hope that I hear you. I hope that I'm in a place where I listen to that. But that's not what we do. That's not what Strong Towns is. That's not what we're focused on. That's not what our thing is. And so you shouldn't look to us for that because we're not trying to fill that niche. And if you're trying to force us to fill that niche, you're actually misunderstanding what we're doing. You're actually misunderstanding the bottom-up part of our bottom-up revolution. A couple months ago, I was invited down to the Minnesota State Capitol to be part of a press conference about parking mandates. And I did a podcast on this earlier this year. So if you listen to that, you know where this is going. I was invited to speak about a bill that was introduced and is now pending at the Minnesota State Legislature that would prohibit cities from enacting parking mandates, right? Forcing private property owners to build public parking. And this is core Strong Towns, right? This is right in, we literally have a campaign at Strong Towns. It's one of our five core campaigns at Strong Towns. That's what we're doing. The bill is really, really short. It's two paragraphs. It basically is almost word for word exactly what our campaign language is. You could not have a more on-message thing than this particular bill at the Minnesota State Legislature. And so I said, yeah, I'm here. It's 2 hours away. I will drive down. I will speak at the press conference. I will talk to people. I will answer questions. I'm here to support this. The bill was sponsored by a guy named Omar Fattah. Now, Senator Omar Fattah, he's a Minnesota State Senator. He represents South Minneapolis, I think. I don't know. I had a really nice talk with him about his district and he talked to me about where I live. He said, next time you come down, come over and I'll show you all around my district. And I said, yeah, next time you come up to Brainerd, please come up to Brainerd sometime and I'll show you all around Brainerd. And we'll talk about it. We had a really, really nice conversation about the places that we're from, right? Omar Fattah, Senator Omar Fattah is of Somali descent. I really don't know if he himself grew up in Somalia, if he was born here, I really have no idea. It's immaterial to me. Like, I don't care. He's an elected state senator working on an issue that I care about. He is a really nice guy. I got to chat with him a little bit. He is very human. He has a family. He has people he cares about. He has a district he loves. He's trying to do a really good job. I admire him. I like him. I think he's a nice human being. And guess what? He cares about this issue that I care about, parking mandates. Now, he is a member of the Democrat Socialist Party. This I did not know going in. You know what? I still don't care. I still like him. I still think he's a nice guy. And guess what? He still cares about an issue that I care about. Also at this press conference was U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar. Now, I do know who Representative Omar is. I didn't know Senator Fattah before this invitation. I do know Representative Omar because she is a very high-profile member of Congress. She is, I think, I'm going to say this, and I hope that I'm right. I think she's the first Muslim elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. I could be right, maybe, I don't know. If not, she's certainly amongst a very, very small group of Muslims who has been elected to that body. I know who she is. I have heard her speak before. I've heard her talk about issues. I know that there is a lot about her from a policy standpoint that I don't align with, but guess what? She cares really, really passionately about parking mandates. When she worked for Minneapolis City Hall, this was one of her issues. It's something that she cares deeply about. The senator asked her to come and be at this press conference, and she did. She spoke really, really well at it about parking. And she was very gracious. She was very kind to me. She was very nice. She was engaging. And we had a really good conversation about this thing that we jointly care about, right? Like eliminating parking mandates. Now, I think it is fair to say that we approach this from different places, right? Of course, we're different people. We have different backgrounds. We have different experiences. In many ways, we're looking at this in somewhat different ways. I'm trying to communicate this broad message to a lot of people who are very, very different from each other. I mean, you're listening to this. I'm speaking to you right now, sitting wherever you are, listening to this. You have certain backgrounds and perspectives. Recognize that there are tens of thousands of people listening to this that have different backgrounds and different perspectives. I'm communicating to all of you, right? Ilhan Omar communicates to her district, and she's trying to make change at the U.S. Congress. So she has like a different job than me, like a different thing. But we agree on this one thing. And so we're sitting here at this press conference, at this podium, side by side together. And I'm really, really proud to be able to stand up there with her, with these other Minnesotans, and say, this would be best for Minnesota. I got to tell you, I got a lot of hate for that. I got a lot of pushback for that. There were pictures of me and Representative Omar, Senator Fattah, getting passed around social media and other places. There was an online publication here in Minnesota that wrote kind of a nasty column about me and about this thing. I took a lot of kind of pushback on this. And I could go through some of the slurs that accompanied that. I'm not going to, because I think they're just distasteful, right? I will say again, I thought both of them, Senator Omar Fattah and Ilhan Omar, were very nice people. They were really kind to me. They were generous to me, and it was a joy to be around them. And we had really good conversations about things that we both cared about, the places they represented, the place that I live, this kind of shared issue of parking reform and how it works in both places. I got to tell you, if it offends you in some way that I am going to stand up with Ilhan Omar, who, yes, is part of the Democrat Socialist Party, and whatever that means to you, whatever connotation that has to you, if that offends you, you don't understand the Strong Towns Project. You don't understand what we're working on. We are here to work across the differences that generally divide our nation, because we are not working in an all politics is national kind of way. We are working at the neighborhood level, at the bottom-up level. We are working with heroes in thousands of cities across this country to make real substantive change on the ground, to do what we can right now with what we have to build strong towns. I have friends, again, people who I consider friends, who said, Chuck, like a word of advice, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You should not be seen with Ilhan Omar. You know what? I'm sorry. That's what we're doing here. That is the mission. And, you know, for people who want me to distance myself from them, to call them out, to oppose the two of them, you know, I refuse. I refuse. We as a movement are going to refuse. And let me be very clear. If you are standing up for parking reform, I'm going to be there with you. If you are standing up for building more housing, if you're standing up for building safer streets, if you want to end highway expansions, if you want to work to make local government accounting more transparent and more understandable to people, I am there with you. This movement is there with you. Strong Towns is there with you. I don't care what party you belong to. I don't care what your macro national politics are. Like, I'm in. I'm going to give you another example because this one hit about the same time as the Ilhan Omar, Senator Fattah stuff started to hit. I was having a conversation on Twitter, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I was having a conversation in there about empathy and about the need to have empathy and understanding for people that you want to work with. And let me just be clear, because I think a lot of people think empathy is like feeling sorry for people or turning the other cheek or being meek or rolling over. My gosh, what is your dictionary? My dictionary of empathy says to understand someone, to genuinely understand them, to not caricature them, demonize them, patronize them, condescend to them, pretend you know what they're thinking, but to actually try to understand from their perspective why they would believe and think the things that they believe. I've been having this as a kind of an ongoing conversation, actually, but when it first came up, a group of people, in a very like mean-spirited way, went and dug up, that makes it sound like they were, I'm sure they had it somewhere in their reserves or did a search or what have you, but recalled that I am an advisor to a political party called the American Solidarity Party. Now, the American Solidarity Party is probably not one you've heard of before. It certainly was not one that I had heard of prior to really about 5 or 6 years ago now. Let me say this about myself. I am a Catholic. I go to church weekly. I do my best to be a good practicing Catholic. There's a lot that goes into that. I know I've talked about my Catholicism to a degree before because it is a part of who I am. In terms of political beliefs, the American Solidarity Party probably more closely represents my beliefs than a lot of other parties. Is it perfect? No. Do I dogmatically like line up behind it? No. Would I emphasize certain things over others? Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I'm a complex person, right? We all are. I think if we all step back and like look at our own set of beliefs and then try to fit that square peg into the round hole of the political parties that we have aligned in this country, you're going to find a lot of like misalignment, right? The American Solidarity Party came to me and asked me, would I advise them on, let's just say, Strong Towns-esque issues? Members of the Solidarity Party had been reading Strong Towns. They said, we like your views on housing reform. We like your views on city building. We like your views on parking mandates and safe streets and ending highway expansions. We like your views on transparent economy. We're buying into this. We have a platform. We have issues. We have a party. We're doing stuff. Would you advise us on those issues? And I said, yes, I would be happy to advise you on those issues. And so they put me on their website as an advisor. Now, again, I'm going to say, this is a very small party, right? I don't know how many votes they got in the last election nationally, but if you told me it was in the four figures, that would not surprise me, like four digits, right? That's thousands. If you told me tens of thousands, that would be plausible, but I would say probably on the lower end of that. They're not like a major force, right? They're not like there's going to be no recount in which, you know, historically it's like the American Solidarity Party threw this election to this candidate over this candidate because they were such a powerful force among swing voters. It's just not the case, right? This is like a very, I'm not trying to put people in this party down, but this is not, they're not a powerful force in electoral politics. Like they're not changing things, right? They're not swaying a lot of votes. I am happy to, I am ready to go advise anyone who wants to adopt a Strong Towns approach. Like if you are the Democrat Socialist Party, if you are the Republican Party, if you are the Democratic Party, if you are the Green Party or the, I don't know, the Cannabis Party, like whoever you are, if you are like Strong Towns is speaking truth, I want to adopt their ideas. We want to implement that approach. Come and help us do that. Come and help us understand what you're saying. I'm going to say, I'm there. Like I'm there. I'm in it. The tweet that pointed out that I was a member of the American Solidarity Party didn't point it out, obviously, in that thread. What they did is they went through the American Solidarity Party platform and said, here's like the horrible, evil things that they think. And I'm not going to go through them because, again, much as with the slurs against, Senator Fatah and Representative Omar, these are ungenerous statements by people uninterested in, dealing with the complexities of things. I will say, just as a friendly aside, that, if you struggle with the American Solidarity Party, you will find that a lot of the things that, say, as in this Twitter thread, very, very progressive-leaning people struggle with the American Solidarity Party. Those same people would struggle very much with the Republican Party. I find personally that the American Solidarity Party often has a lot of overlap on social issues with the Republican Party, except very much in a Catholic way. They put a lot more love and a lot more compassion and a lot more, genuinely trying to help people into their platform than the Republican Party has. That being said, if there's a string of social issues that you believe very strongly in, you believe are, human rights issues beyond, above and beyond anything else, that you cannot have a conversation even with someone who might entertain an opposing view from yours, you're probably not going to like, a lot of political parties. You're probably going to like half the population, quite frankly. So there was a kind of swarm of people, again, on Twitter, saying Strong Towns is evil. Strong Towns is consorting with heretics. If you're a donor of Strong Towns, we're going to spam you. If you are a supporter of Strong Towns, we're going to shame you and all that. And I got to say, I was in Alaska at the time when this happened, and I was not quite inundated, but close to inundated with people, demanding that I make this statement and that statement, that I renounce this belief or that belief, that I stand up and say certain things. I had friends, it's 1 a.m. in Alaska, which is really early in the morning here. And I'm texting with people trying to calm people down and explain, to people who have been around Strong Towns for a long time, to people I've sat at a table with and had dinner with and chatted with, I'm like, no, I do not hate you. No, I do not hate your daughter. I love you. I want you to do well. I support you. I support your family. This is not what Strong Towns is about. Let's focus on the things we do well. I'm going to say, I will do these things. I will have these individual conversations. I think individual is a good way to handle it. But as an organization, you should not be coming to us. You should not be coming to us looking for political affirmation. You should not be looking for us to support a candidate, to support a position, a viewpoint, a social issue, one way or the other. Like you shouldn't look to us for that because that's not what we're here to do. That's not what our 501c3 filing says we're interested in doing. That's not what our strategic plan says we're focused on. That's not what we're doing, right? That's not what we're doing. Strong Towns has grown, right, to be way, way bigger than me. I'm thankful for that. And that has been by design, right? I mean, if this is about me, we'd just call it like Chuck Marone and Associates. We didn't do that intentionally at the beginning. We're not going to do that today. You're going to hear many, many voices coming out of Strong Towns. I can tell you that just on our three different podcast feeds, if you're listening to this podcast, you should be listening to Bottom Up Revolution. You should be listening to Upzoned. These are two brilliant, brilliant podcasts that are done by other voices within the Strong Towns movement. I can guarantee you that the people running those podcasts and I do not vote the same on every single election. We do not think the same about every single issue. I guarantee you that we have all kinds of different beliefs. The things that we agree on are the core parts of Strong Towns, right? That's the things we've come together to work on. And these are beautiful people. They're wonderful people. They're great voices within this movement. They're really, really important. I want you all to know that I'm fully committed to adding more and more voices, particularly voices that are very different than mine, right? Voices that come at these issues from a different place, come at these issues from a different angle, right? Come at these issues from a different set of lived experiences. And the reason I'm committed to doing that, you could say that, you know, well, it's the right thing to do. Okay, fine. I get that. Like, I don't think it's the wrong thing to do, but it's an essential thing to do if you're trying to grow the kind of movement that we're trying to grow, if you're trying to build the kind of movement that we're trying to build, if you're trying to experience the kind of change that we're trying to create. Because the world that I envision, the world that our board envisions, the world that our team envisions, the world that I hope our members envision is not one where big cities are great and small towns are horrible. It's not one where red states flourish and blue states suffer. It's not one where people who drive big trucks wind up dead on the side of the road and people who ride bikes are exalted. It's not one where, you know, take whatever your division is within many other city building kind of related places. It's not that. It's one where everybody prospers and everybody flourishes and we're all better off from adopting a Strong Towns approach. And if we truly believe that it is all of us benefiting, that it is all of us living in better places, that it is all of our cities becoming stronger and healthier and more prosperous and better places to live, then we gotta mean all. And we gotta mean all when it's easy, and we especially gotta mean all when it's hard. I want you to know that as we enter this election year, as we enter a year that is certain to be insane and crazy, that we are going to remain focused on core Strong Towns issues. We're not going to vary from that. We're not going to get sucked into other things, other efforts, other issues outside of our core area focus. We don't have anything valuable to say on those, and we're just not going to say anything. Like, it's not our jam. You should feel free. You should feel happy. You should feel joy to support any candidate that you want in any way that suits you. I'm not going to criticize you. I'm not going to criticize any candidate. I'm not going to criticize people who devote a lot of time to national politics. If you get sucked up in this whole thing, go do it. If that's what you feel like you're called to do, right? I want you to know that we're going to be here when you're done. When you're ready to get things done on the ground, when you're ready to join with others, we're going to be here for you, right? We're not turning our back on anyone. And when you do find us, when you do come back to us, when you do engage with us, you're going to find here at Strong Towns that we've got lots and lots of different people part of this movement. We have people who call themselves Republicans, and we have people who call themselves Democrats. And we have lots of people who call themselves unaffiliated. We have that in abundance here. We have people who consider the Second Amendment like the most important thing, right? And we have people who are ready to abolish the police. I've talked to both of them. I've had beautiful, wonderful conversations with people who believe all those things. I've had conversations with them about Strong Towns issues. And guess what? We find areas of agreement, right? We have people of many faiths. I know people in Strong Towns who are Catholic like me. I also know a lot of people who are other Christian denominations. I know people in our movement who are Jewish, who are Muslim, who are Hindu. I know people in our movement who have no spiritual practice at all. And you know what? They're all beautiful people. Like we find things in common to work on, right? We have people here at Strong Towns who have all kinds of nuanced views on all the issues that divide us, whether it's abortion or gender or race, whatever it is that you're bringing to the table. We need this movement to be about everybody. And so we are not avoiding conversations with anybody. My promise to you is that we're going to stay on message. We're going to stay focused on Strong Towns. We're going to stay focused on this bottom-up revolution. We're going to stay focused on our five core campaigns. We are going to be hyper-focused on communicating across differences, communicating with everyone, reaching out to people who do not look like me, have experiences like me, people who bring different perspectives, different ideas, different ways of thinking into our movement. The only thing that we're asking is that you do the same, right? When you show up here, be part of this bottom-up movement. Be part of this broad diversity. Be part of this working across difference. Try to have empathy. Work on understanding others. Even if you don't agree, even if you don't agree at all, even if you think that any other perspective besides your own is abhorrent and like no decent human being could hold it, work at trying to understand how a decent human being could disagree with you. That's what working across difference means, right? If you want to talk to me one-on-one about things I believe, if it matters that much to you who I voted for, if it matters that much to you what my view is on this issue or that issue, and you genuinely believe that, it's not some kind of like, you know, litmus test. You're not trying to trick me so you can, you know, score some points on some social media platform. If you genuinely are like, Chuck, I'm concerned. Like, this is a heartfelt belief I have. Let me talk to you. I'm happy to chat with you. I'm happy to have that conversation. And I've had dozens of those conversations in the last couple months. But don't call on me to say something that's outside of the core Strong Towns set of ideas. Don't call on Strong Towns to be something that we're not. And let me flip that around, because I think the positive way of saying that is actually the framing that I want to end this podcast on. If you are out there working to build a strong town, if you're starting a local conversation, if you're sharing ideas with your mayor and your city council, if you're out there working with your neighbors to try to make your place better, if you are sharing Strong Towns ideas on social media or, you know, with your Chamber of Commerce president or your local PTA club or your church group or your synagogue or wherever it is, I want you to be confident of one thing. We are not going to undercut you by going off message. You're not going to wake up one morning and have Strong Towns coming out of left field with some message that is not part of our core conversation. We are going to stay on message. We're going to stay focused, and we are going to support you, because you are the hero that is building this movement. You are the hero that is out there making change. You are the one communicating these issues in your place, in your way, with your people, growing this movement for change. We are not going to undercut you. You're not going to wake up one day embarrassed by us. You're not going to have some political statement that you can't stand by. We're not going to, you know, be engaging in some way that is going to bring you shame. Go be confident that as this election cycle heats up and gets crazier and crazier and crazier, that Strong Towns is going to be focused on our five core campaigns, on building a bottom-up movement. We're going to be focused on what Strong Towns does. And if there's one rock that you can cling to over the next year, it's that one right there. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of this. I started this podcast saying how happy I am. I am very happy. Like, things are going really well here. There's a ton of momentum, and being able to spend the time again to re-engage and engage with people in the depth and the meaning that I want to has been really a fulfilling thing for me, has made me very happy. But I also, you know, am very happy and very grateful that I can do a podcast like this and say the things that I've said here. And I know that you not only got my back, but I got your back, right? Like, you're ready to go. I see it every day. People rolling up their sleeves, going out, doing hard work in neighborhoods, in blocks. It inspires me to no end. And it gives me a certain level of like peace and confidence and happiness and joy to be able to sit down here, have this conversation with you and know that we're on the same page, right? That we're after the same thing, that we can not just understand people, not just respect people, not just be decent human beings to each other, but that by working across differences, we can often even grow to love each other in ways that are surprising and shocking and beautiful, and really a contrast to the ugliness that we see around us. I want to be a movement about very serious things. We're doing very serious things. But let's never forget that caring for our neighbors, loving one another, taking care of each other is the reason we do this, right? Building a strong town is about doing more with less, right? It's about making cities more productive. It's about taking care of the finances. But we don't do it because we like good balance sheets, right? We do it because there's humans attached to it. We do it because that's the way we take care of each other. That's the way we truly like look after each other. That's the way we love each other. So everybody, thank you so much. Get out there and keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Take care.
Tragedy times require what? Drastic measures, yes! Who said that?
They know that America's one big pothole right now.
Bill, 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 Bill. That's the story.
Chuck Marone, this has been fascinating.
Who made the city?
I like you. I like your vision of the world.
The United Nations Earth Summit, Agenda 21. Yeah.